Welcome back to another episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. And I'm already laughing a little bit because we've had a little bit of fun already here before we start the podcast. But I'm joined tonight by Matt Olson and Jack Tuhill, two different guests from last week, Cody and Caden. Thanks for your services. No longer required this week. Thanks. Maybe we'll have you back on next week. But Matt Olson's back on the pod all the way over in WA. And it's been a decent couple of weeks of Perth Glory, not too bad. So he's feeling okay. But what else is going on in the world of Matt Olson?
Yeah, well, pleasure to be here on a warm, sunny afternoon. I care more about Front Page Football than I do my own family. And in the name of that, it is a pleasure to be talking A-League once again. Of course, I've been covering the women's futsal as well. They played their final game against the Philippines tonight, but we are not here to talk about that because an exciting championship race has held another chapter. It's heralded a fantastic chapter on Saturday night, and I just cannot wait to get stuck in. Christian.
Bro's cooking tonight. What was that little monologue happening there? Loving that. Jack also joins us. Jack, it's been a while since you've been on the podcast. How's things in the in your world?
You know, can't really complain. You know, still walking around. It's been a good start to the new year. I was affectionately joined. It was a wonderful experience to be on FPF TV back again with Matt Olson last night for that thriller.
Of course, I know. I completely forgot to mention that you guys had the stream last night.
Yeah, and it was a great deal of fun. We got to do a bit of cycling talk, a bit of Bickies talk, but of course we'll keep on topic for this one because there's some interesting points around the A-League this round that we need to bring up and definitely need to address.
What did we're going to talk about Melbourne Victory first up to start off with? But what did you guys make of the original rivalry? I thought obviously I was there. I thought it was like one of the best games of the season, to be honest with you, particularly from a quality standpoint. What did you guys think?
Well, I'll go quickly. I thought that the last 2 weeks of FPF TV in terms of fantastic A League football has made up for that shocking doubleheader that we had to endure.
Oh yeah,
about a month and a half ago. The 3-2, I think, was a fair result. I think both teams played really, really well. I think we'll probably zoom in on both teams to see where they could possibly improve in this podcast. But as far as a neutral standpoint goes, what a cracking game to take in. And in a sold-out Cooper Stadium down in Adelaide, like they're always big occasions. And when you get that coupled with a brilliant game of football, you really cannot, you know, complain for the quality that you're able to witness there.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. We might touch on it a little bit more at the end of the podcast. We are going to start, though, by talking about Melbourne Victory in a bit more detail, not Adelaide United. We're going to talk a little bit about Arthur Diles because it's been frustration which has been brewing amongst Melbourne Victory and their fan base, well, Melbourne Victory's fan base, for a few weeks now. Arthur Diles is now without a win in 6 games in charge. Melbourne Victory have drawn 2 and lost 4, I believe, or is it no? Drawn 3 and lost 3. Drawn 3 and lost 3 in that time. So, I guess Matt, let's start with you because basically Patrick Kisnorbo left the club. Now, whether that was probably a combination of he maybe was looking for something different, maybe they were not seeing eye to eye with management there on something, and maybe a combination of him going for a more prestigious job in terms of pay in particular. But that situation here, Melbourne Victory looked fantastic up until that point. Kisnorbo leaves, Diles is thrown into the hot seat, and now there's been rumours out there that Melbourne Victory have given Arthur Diles like a 2-year deal, potentially a financially motivated move, and basically maybe they haven't announced it because he hasn't won yet, which is kind of a little bit awkward if that is the case. But what's your kind of read on this situation? Because I, I, I actually don't think they're playing that badly at all. And I think Arthur Diller said after the game, having spoke to him in the presser last night, that really, you know, not a lot of teams would go to Coopers like that and create as much as they did, and get Adelaide on the back foot for as much as they did for some periods of that game, yet they come up empty-handed, don't they?
My biggest takeaway for victory would be one of a few things that I noticed last night. And I think, firstly, I felt that in attack, they didn't really offer a lot in terms of that kind of multi-dimensional forward line kind of effect that you want to get. You want to be able to be versatile. You want to adapt to the situation. And I felt that although they were having the bulk of the chances, and certainly in that first half, they offered those chances, and both teams, you know, really were off the back of a lot of what Melbourne Victory were doing to attack into the game. But I felt, and this is something I said to Jack on the stream, is that the bulk of the attacks that were working out for Victory, they were quite direct, actually. They actually were missing a lot of that kind of here's a plan B option to really get into the game. But I think another big takeaway, certainly in their mentality, and where I think a lot of gaps in not leadership, but possibly just in the way that they're coached, which is the concerning sign about Diles and what you're saying on a contract extension, is, you know, I go back to the own goal where you have Miranda and Hamill have sort of combined to mark Archie Goodwin in that situation. There's no real communication between them, and they've not, you know, they're in a position where they need to admonish themselves. They need to be into a position where they're really aware of each other's game, and they ultimately stumble over each other. Goodwin's nowhere near, you know, being in a threatening position, and it's just the reliance of that admonishment that I find to be baffling. I think the mentality on that is really a coach killer, yes, and I think that's a phrase that Jack used. But then if you actually look at the coaching itself, it's just the gaps in things like that that are happening where I'd actually voice a bit of concern. I think they are easily a top six team, and there's a lot of individual quality there, but it's the use of that quality that then becomes a coaching problem, and that's where I think Diles is behind in what he wants. And you know, Victory have done this before, where they've just gone for the quick and easy option and essentially ruined Grant Bredner's career because of it at the turn of the decade. And I think if you go down that route of jumping into the convenient situation with, you know, the interim manager, it's a slippery slope, and it's one that I don't really think anyone wants to see Victory in, because they've already come off the back of a really, really bad spell and a few bad seasons there. Even the second season under Popovich was not so great. So, you know, I just question so much about the mentality and the way they played the game out last night.
I disagree. So where I agree with you is I think Victory create a lot of chances in transition, particularly in the first half. And I think that's what you mean about it was a more of a direct approach from that standpoint. Where I also agree with you is, but I think they did this in the first sort of 25 minutes of the second half. But like Adelaide United, so we're just talking about last night now, but we want to talk a bit more generally. But Adelaide United are more, you know, they're a team that if you can turn the game into a bit of a basketball game against them, it's kind of a team like Victory with more quality should be able to kind of, I guess, win that type of a game. But also that first half seemed very sort of end to end. And I was watching thinking Melbourne Victory, you've got more quality on paper than Adelaide United. That is true. Adelaide United are doing great. They've got a lot of quality too. But I think Melbourne Victory, if you look player for player, particularly in attacking areas, still have a lot of more proven quality, right? And they struggle to actually maintain possession for long periods. And that's what kind of concerned me. And I know like Adelaide away, not many teams really do kind of contain, like, hold on to the ball for long periods. Where I will disagree with you though is Melbourne Victory created, and actually under Arthur Diles, in terms of chance creation, it's very similar to Patrick Osorbo. He's also employing the same system. He hasn't changed anything like that. He's kind of just trying something which he's just continuing with what was working, because it was before Patrick Osorbo left. Victory almost created double the amount of expected goals as Adelaide last night. Against Western, they created over three expected goals. I know they scored three. But the flip side, against like Wanderers, a lot of expected goals created. I think the only games where under Diles where they've really been kind of disappointing going forward are the Auckland draw and Sydney away, where they lost 3-0. But the Sydney away, of course, Mishash got sent off after 15 minutes, and I think that really kind of fucked them over. But I think what's happening here is defensively they've had a big drop-off from Kisnorbo, and I think there is something to be said. Like, I understand no one who supports Victory or City wants to hear any sort of Kisnorbo praise and whatever, and I get it, you know, whatever you think about him. But there is something to be said about the difference of, like, personality that's in charge of Victory right now too, because Patrick Kisnorbo, like, that intense sort of, like, we are going to get in your face when we lose the ball, we are not going to let you breathe, I'm going to make the players run even harder when we have a bye. Like, all this sort of mentality, that's exactly how a Melbourne Victory coach should behave and how a team with this quality should attack every game. And I'm not sure Arthur Diles has a sort of type of personality in terms of that. I don't think they've been able to actually replicate that sort of aggressiveness without the ball. And then, like you said, Matt, Miranda and Hamill are making some mistakes now. That's creeping in. They've lost Jason Garrier. And I also feel, and Jack, I'll throw to you now, but I also feel like, you know, I do think the Kisnorbo stuff, what happened there, is a bit of financially motivated. I also think the reason they haven't appointed a new coach, to Matt's point, is financially motivated too. And I'm actually wondering if they're going to lose one or two more in this window too, because they might be having a bit of a fire sale. But what do you think?
Well, I'll start with last night and just some key aspects that I think have been a little bit symptomatic of Arthur Diles in his short tenure as a head coach at Melbourne Victory, something that I've really noticed. Just the organisation of the back line has sort of fallen away. And we talked about how, you know, for most of the season, they still are using those transition routes and direct routes to create most of their chances. You know, similarly, under Kisnorbo, very direct defending and very, like, I can't really think of the word, but it was a very, very purposeful press, right? And they rarely staggered, and they were pretty defensively, like, sound because of it. And I feel like that's sort of fallen away. And I don't know if it's a motivational thing or if Diles has actually tinkered with the defense a little bit. The loss of Jason Garrier, I think, was glaring, because I think Ben Folami exposed Josh Rawlins on multiple occasions in that game last night. And I think that right side of the defense without Jason Garrier is going to suffer for the rest of the season now. It's interesting you bring up that Arthur Diles has reported, you know, the rumors are swelling that he's been given a 2-year deal.
I just want to clarify, so, you know, we're not getting into any trouble here. That's just kind of been put out there on Twitter. I really don't know how legitimate that sort of rumor is.
However unsubstantial it is, it's like addressing in generality. For me, like, Arthur Diles is an interim manager until really Victory can get their financial situation sorted out with the collapse of 777 Partners and that equity share and that cash flow coming into the club, which is going to be interesting in terms of personnel. And look, to be honest, like you said, Victory might not be able to afford to bring in a new coach, maybe not even next season, maybe even the season after. Like, this could be a 2-year thing until they find another financial year. So you have to look at Diles as, like, all right, how can he pivot? And I think Diles has got enough experience to be given this opportunity. I think where he has to work harder is his game management. Like, I feel like that at times Victory were very difficult to break down, especially, I think, like, in the central areas in the first, like, 15-20, and then it sort of fell away, and that's where your game management comes into as a coach. You have to be able to switch your players back on and refocus the defense to cancel out the threats. And a big threat in those games in the right wide areas, namely Ben Folami, was exposing the Victory defense a lot. And you know, Josh Rawlins, of course, coming in as the right back, was back up all season until Jason Garrier recently left. It's going to be difficult for him to adjust, but the coach has to, you know, I suppose, be a bit more heavy-handed with how he approaches these sort of matches. And it could come into the fact where Diles could make a decision to either play a little bit more conservative to try and prevent those sort of opportunities, Or, in fact, you know, when you said, like, getting to a basketball game, you know, going goal for goal, it hasn't really worked in the last couple of weeks. If he, I suppose, you know, sticks to that sort of methodology, it'd just be interesting to see how both the attack and the defense sort of builds and you know, mutates and see what it sort of turned into. Like, because I don't think Dill, as it stands, has any sort of personal coaching philosophy that's coming through this victory lineup.
So I think 2 points on that. If Melbourne Victory are in such a dire situation financially that they can't appoint a like-for-like replacement for Patrick Snorbo, essentially, and they have to promote within, then where's the transparency around that? Because, as we know, this is not the first time in even the last few years that Melbourne Victory have not been transparent and open about something like this. And I think that's where some frustration's coming in with their fans, who are probably starting to put two and two together and think, okay, like, because, you know, Arthur Dealers, now, is he a Victorian? I'm not sure. I actually haven't looked that up myself, but Jack, maybe you could get onto that for me. But if he is, like, but even if not, like, he is a young coach in coaching years. It's his first experience. Maybe if you came out and said, like, you know, this is the way we're going to go with Arthur because, yep, there's some mitigating circumstances because of it, but we back him. He's had experience working under the likes of Tony Popovich, Arthur Pappas. He's had some experience. He's had plenty of experience in an A-League environment, and we think he can take that step up to working as a head coach. And we understand there's going to be challenges with that, but we're going to back him in, and we want the supporters to get around him, get behind him, because there's still plenty of quality in this team. And we feel like with the right backing, you know, Arthur can still get this team to be, you know, basically a finals team and still be very competitive. I don't think if they're worried about some sort of backlash around that, if they have, let's say, given him a 2-year deal, I don't think that's going to be a massive issue. So there's that. Second point, and this will be the last thing I say on this, the game management stuff, like, it's obviously clear that, particularly around substitutes, Arthur Dillers is going to need a few more games to kind of get a little bit more used to, I think, game management as an A-League head coach. Because, so I asked him about, I couldn't believe Fornaroli was taken off 10 minutes into the second half, and then I couldn't believe Santos and Arzani, two of Melbourne Victory's most dangerous players in that game, were then taken off for Jing Rees and Nishan Volupele. And all due respect to Nishan Volupele in particular, he didn't offer anything when he came on, and neither did Jing Rees. And I think a lot of Melbourne Victory fans are kind of fed up with Jing Rees a little bit. And I don't really understand the kind of way they're using him, and to be honest with you, why he was actually signed at all. But, like, I asked him afterwards, like, because I'm viewing it as they were 3-2 down when he took Santos and Arzani off at that point. 3-2 down on the road in Adelaide. Now, I think they've got 5-day recovery until Sydney at home on Friday. So I can understand part of, like, we need to keep the guys fresh. Nish and Jing Rees can come in, they're fresh, and maybe impact the game. But also, you're playing not too bad. These guys are showing their quality in the game. Push them for the last 20, 25 minutes and see if you can get something out of the game. Because as soon as those two came off, they had no threat. And basically, the game kind of just petered out. And Adelaide, a team who's not good defensively, kind of actually were pretty comfortable in seeing out the game. But that's, game management is a big thing. Obviously, our boy Caden Foley wrote a bit of a piece on his lack of game management in the Western United game as well, where Victory kind of invited pressure on and ultimately lost. But Matt, Jack, you guys take it away. Anything to add there to kind of put a bow on this?
I just wanted to confirm, I'm pretty sure Arthur Dealers did grow up in Sydney. Played a lot of his playing career at Sydney Olympic and Sydney United. So I'm pretty sure he's a New South Welshman. But I can't really find any hard data on that one. That might be something that we have to pick out of a press conference.
Excellent. Matt, anything to add on this Dealers victory situation?
Yeah, look, I think it's the use of substitutions is probably another one I'd like to just point to. You know, Nish is someone that, let's not forget, we've seen obviously play very well against the Chinese national team in Adelaide, and his exploits under Popovich, he grew a lot of confidence through that, to then kind of be in a position where not only is he coming on for that kind of impact sub role, but there didn't really appear to be a lot of confidence. And I think the biggest key is understanding of what his role was. There was one where he was dribbling off the byline, you know, getting caught trying to kind of create something that I don't even think he knew what the game plan really was in that situation, and just got completely overrun by the Adelaide backline. And that's one where, you know, the methodology has to kind of pay off in some way, but it didn't actually look like the direction and methodology was there to begin with. So you preface a lot of concern, but I think the biggest frustration is, and again, just to go back to my earlier point, this team is easily good enough. And I think that's where a lot of people are becoming rightfully, you know, unstuck with victory.
Well, yeah. And, you know, just the final thing is, like, they are good enough. And also, I asked Diles this too, like, they had plenty of chances last night. And also, the lack of chance conversion with victory was even a problem under Kosnorbo, where they would win a game 2-1 when really they should have won 4 or 5-1. Under Popovich, it was a big issue too. They missed a lot of chances. And I'm kind of like, you know, you can blame coaches all you want, but, like, at the end of the day, victory players were put in a lot of positions last night in the original rivalry to score goals, and they didn't. And, you know, I don't know. I feel right now this is more of an upper management sort of issue that needs to be sorted out quickly, whether that's coming out, if they have given him the two-year deal, coming out, announcing it, saying this is the direction we're going, this is why we're doing it, and just going from there, or whether they need to just move fast and hire someone. Yeah, they've got to get some sort of clarity going, because victory fans are losing patience quickly. All right. Sydney FC, speaking of struggling giants, next one. Now, I mean, struggling might be a little bit hyperbolic for Sydney FC, because they had been in some decent form, but for any team in this competition to concede 4 goals at home to Ruben Zakovic's Brisbane Roar, once you do that, you're going to become a topic of discussion on this podcast. So, Ufi Tale, Sydney FC, what's going on? Because he's starting to cop a bit from Sydney FC fans. There's a lot of criticism yesterday around the lack of rotation with the lineup from the Wellington game in midweek, which I kind of tend to agree with, because Sydney came out incredibly lethargic in this game. They made Brisbane Roar look like Barcelona. And credit to Brisbane, who we spoke about last week. We're not going to talk about them this week. Credit to them in the sense that they took advantage of that, and they did score some nice goals. But, you know, Matt's got the face. I really don't want to give Brisbane too much credit, to be honest with you. In fact, barely any, because, you know, like, well done. You won a game after 13. Good for you. But Sydney, they beat the Mariners and Perth before the Wellington draw, so they were on a little bit of a revival. But then this result has kind of just, you know, put an absolute shitter on all of that. So, Matt, you seem to be very intently nodding as if you've got something to really say about this. So what's going on? What's going on with Talley? What's going on with Sydney?
I don't think it's one that you can necessarily pick out. I think that the luck of the draw of the way the season's been playing out is a funny one, where they've not been able to find their rhythm. One thing I'd love to say on Sydney FC now, though, is that, you know, they are, albeit basically exactly a month away, but they still have had that Champions League contribution. And the one thing I always come into the back of my mind is continental football in the A-League has been proven time and time again to never be, you know, a mix that goes well. I don't think if you look through, and of course the Mariners, who had the distinction of playing in the AFC Cup and not the Champions League. Champions League 2 is also now different in that, you know, you're facing teams of a better quality as well. But really, in our history, we've never had a team that's had continental success and, you know, also had to battle with keeping up in the A-League. I'd challenge anyone to get the archives out. Have we had a top 3, top 4 team that's also done well in the Champions League? And yet, you know, they're going into a round of 16 clash with Bangkok United, and I think that a lot of that overbearing in the
a round of 16 clash, which has massive ramifications for all of Australian football. So
on the coefficient, yes. But I really pin
that was sarcasm. But anyway,
six games that you have to play during that early part of the season where they clearly didn't kick into their rhythm. Again, happy to look at the results on this one, but I'm pretty sure that the big issue with Ufi Tele's team was being able to find the consistency, being able to put the results together. And I'm not saying that that's the particular issue now, because, I mean, even with guys like, you know, Wahim and a lot of the foreign players that they've brought in, Joe Lolly's always been dependable. Like, they've got a lot of quality in the team. They've been able to perform at an acceptable level, but just struggling to kick on. And I would like to think fatigue is a big part of that. But obviously, tactically, there's more to say. It's just a contribution that always comes to mind when we have these conversations.
Well, I just wanted to jump in on that, because what's interesting is they've actually played 14 games in the A-League. And just to give a comparison, on top of the Asian contributions, like, Adelaide's only played 12, Auckland's only played 12, Melbourne City's only played 13, you know, a team like Wellington's only played 12, right? So they've still had a huge calendar, not just in the continental side, but also in the domestic calendar as well. They haven't contributed to the A-League buys as of yet. You know, they're sitting atop with Western United in terms of games played. So they're playing a lot of minutes. And I think the concern here, and I think Sydney FC fans might be blowing this a little bit out of proportion, I think it's mostly down to, like you mentioned, rotation of players, but also how they approach certain games and certain aspects of games. Like, for example, if you take this result in isolation against Brisbane Roar were always going to attack in transition. They were never going to try and control possession against Sydney FC. And I think this would have been a game where maybe that like sort of really intense press that they employ in more games than not could have really been wound back. And not to give another lethargic performance, because of course that draw against Wellington Phoenix, you know, took a lot of the wind out of their sails in terms of the 2 weeks, you know, prior to that. But it just would have been one of those games where Sydney FC should have just been looking to get and grind out that 3 points, and that crucial 3 points when it comes to the top six, and that big clash against Melbourne Victory in the Big Blue coming up in the next round. So I'm not overly concerned. I think that Tale will learn this lesson, because, again, Tale previously was managing at Wellington Phoenix. The expectations at Wellington Phoenix when he was the head coach were far less than the expectations at Sydney FC currently. I think that Tale in the future will probably look to be, you know, to take those little bit of nuances and go, okay, we played midweek, we've had a stacked calendar, we've got, you know, basically the worst team in the comp this week. We can probably get away with 1-0 or 2-0 just based on quality alone. Probably don't need to press as high, probably don't need to run our guts out as much. But again, you don't know what goes behind the change rooms. And to credit Brisbane Roar, I thought they executed their chances quite well. Again, Sydney FC almost came back and won it, similar to how like Newcastle Jets capitulated against them, a couple of weeks ago. So you also got to look at that the game plan on this occasion didn't really work, because Brisbane were quite clinical when they did get into attacking positions. And I just feel like I'm going to bring it up. And I'm going to give too much credit to Brisbane Roar, obviously. You know, first win since April 2024, you know, over 280 days. But look, I think that those are some like interesting nuances that you have to discuss when you take this result in isolation.
So I'm gonna disagree on 2 points. So I think both of you are like giving them way too much of a free pass when it comes to schedule. I get, and we're not going to go open a massive can of worms now. We don't have time about like the AFC comps and managing and all that. But Sydney FC, in a midfield and attacking sense, have more than enough to rotate and still have enough quality to beat Brisbane Roar at home. So with all due respect to both of you, that's kind of horseshit.
Full disclosure, it's because I actually didn't get to watch the game, so I needed.
Oh no, no, okay. So obviously, like, he didn't rotate, he didn't change the 11 at all from Wellington, and like Wellington away, they didn't offer enough in that game, and like still the travel, it was kind of clear to me that yeah, some travel had clearly kind of come into their first 20 minutes of the game against the Roar. But like, this is where we need to address something like the Max Burgess situation and be like, that's a perfect game for a Max Burgess to get his opportunity to start, give him some confidence, Brisbane at home. Like, this is what we're talking about. Jaden Kucharski, has gone from excellent super sub at the start of the season to I don't know what's going on. He's just not using him or something at the moment. It's bizarre. And then also it's like Pat Wood got loaned out to the Glory. No problem. I understood that. But it was loan out Pat Wood, and instead of let's bolster the minutes for Kacharski and someone like Thiago Quintal, who, I mean, showed off the bench yesterday. He's more than capable of giving them serviceable bench minutes, even starting in a game against Brisbane, surely, right? But instead of elevating those guys, they go and get someone like Josh Soteria. Now, Josh Soteria, I think that's a little bit of a nuanced one where Talley's worked with him at the Phoenix, and he really seems to like him for his style of football. But there are some definitely like some legitimate questions about the way Ufi Talley's using this squad. And I'm not sure, to Jack's point about the difference between being at Wellington as opposed to Sydney, maybe he's not used to actually having so many options available to him, where it's almost like he wants to actually just play the same team every game and build like a continuity with it, when actually it's like, hey, mate, maybe just rotate one or two positions, because A, if you want to be that aggressive with your pressing, you need guys that are actually fresh to do it. And also, like, they got heaps of quality on the bench. Like, they got heaps, you know. There's more than enough there. I know, like, someone like Wahim yesterday was coming back from a little injury, so that's probably why he was on the bench. But if he was fit to start, probably could have taken out someone like Senna or a Holman. And Jack, just on your point around like the pressing as well, and I mean, you would have watched this game. I actually feel since the Newcastle game where they drew 2-2, Sydney have been much more passive. And I actually think it's been a little bit... No, I think yesterday some of those issues creep back, but it's not so much the pressing. It's more their defensive line is so disjointed in terms of when they're... It's actually... Matt will find this funny. It's kind of a little bit like Perth Glory Light from the start of the season, where like when they press sometimes, they're just not getting the distances right. The back line doesn't push up with the rest of the players, so then they leave gaps in behind. Also, I think Harrison Devenish-Mears, there's a little bit of a sort of conversation regarding him and whether, like, you know, Sydney probably do need a goalkeeper. I don't know if they're going to sign one in January, but he just doesn't seem to be kind of at the level. He's not really suited. Well, he's just not really adapting to kind of being a sweeper keeper from the looks of things. I mean, look at the goal that Ben Halloran scored, the first one yesterday. But I think your point around style was interesting, but I also think like Joel King just has to be better. Like defending yesterday was awful. You know, like there's kind of just some basic positional awareness stuff there where as someone who's been in the Socceroos setup, you need to be better. So, but I think you've got some further points probably maybe around the style as well.
Not necessarily about the style, but I feel like with Sydney and due to the like attacking outlets they have at their disclosure, like to get onto the pitch, we miss out that the only two defenders that they have in the rotation in that lineup off the bench are Alexander Popovich and Jordan Courtney Perkins. And I'm not saying they're bad players. I'm, you know, to be honest, you can make a point that, you know, from about maybe the top six down, they would be starting players for every single team on the table. You can make a pretty good point and say that. But I think that when you talk about the defensively disjointed, you've co-opting a Ryan Grant in a centre-back role because they are light with central defenders and veteran central defenders. And that's why I'm like, I'm not giving them a free pass, but I think that the areas in which you're sort of discussing is like, oh, why can't they go goal for pound for pound, goal for goal with Brisbane? You're looking at this all wrong because it's the...
I didn't say that.
Well, the way you're discussing, you're mentioning attacking players and the players you're...
No. I was talking about the rotation in attack and midfield. I didn't address the rotation defense because, Jack, I agree with you. They don't have depth defensively. That's a real problem.
And that's why I'm not necessarily giving Talley a hall pass, as you put it. All right, it's still a disappointing result. And Sydney really, really do need to react against Melbourne Victory. That's going to be a huge game as well away from home. But I sort of look at it and go, okay, tired team, played midweek, have had the biggest calendar out of all sides, and in my opinion, the most important part of the pitch and the part of the pitch that wins you championships, which is your defense, is extremely light. And like I fully foresaw that a result like this was coming for Sydney FC because they are light in defence, and we'll probably touch on teams that could use a few extra signings in this January period. But Sydney, I don't think the goalkeeper, as you mentioned, is a bigger issue than signing a central defender and signing a quality central defender.
If the Wanderers haven't beaten them to one of these guys already, they should be doing everything they can to get either Dejanek or Thomas Deng, for sure. That's without question.
And that's why I'll leave it. That's the only thing that I wanted to point out is that like that end of the pitch is really, really important, especially for the style that Sydney FC play. When you're pressing so highly, you need to have seasoned veteran defenders that have good game instincts, good game management techniques. And, you know, it's glaring that Ryan Grant, who's been a fullback for all of his career, is really the anchor of that defense. And I think that needs to be pointed out in and amongst all of this stuff about style, rotation, and that's where I'll leave it for me.
And you know, probably up until yesterday, actually, Ryan Grant wasn't doing too bad of a job, in my opinion, as deputising as centre back. But
No, not at all. I think he's been great. But it's just another narrative there.
That's right. And I think also it also means when you have to shift someone like Ryan Grant to centre back, Zach De Jesus has to kind of play more games and more minutes when maybe he's not, you know. These are actually, Matt, this is quite funny because these are kind of similar things that I feel Perth have had some issues with too, where it's like we have to play this guy here because we need to solve this. We need to put out this fire, but then that means another fire is created over here. There's actually a few teams that kind of have these issues with their team because once you have no depth in one sort of area and you have to try and cover for it, well, then another area kind of gets exposed. And also with Ryan Grant, like I know people might laugh at this and whatever, but he does do a lot of things in possession for Sydney as a fullback, which kind of help their style a little bit, and not having him in that fullback role hurts that. But I do think, like, I'm very keen to see what happens with Kucharski. I mean, the Burgess thing is bizarre because it seems like, I remember when asking Talle about Burgess when he wasn't included in the squad when they came to Adelaide, and he said, just not selected, really bluntly. And as soon as you said that, I was like, oh, he's gone. Okay. And then now there's like, I think Simon Hill mentioned on the coverage before the game against Brisbane that Burgess had rejected a chance to basically go to the Mariners. And I'm kind of sitting there like, okay, so what does Burgess want? So, you know.
Can I just say to that end, and I'm wondering if the Ryan Grant situation, you know, Ryan Grant is getting on in age. I mean, he's been around the A-League circles since the better part of the late 2000s, you know. And I think actually, although he is much better in possession and someone that in wider areas knows how to almost bring out the attacking prowess in his play, because of his age and his body, I think rehoning his skills to becoming a centre back is the best way to keep longevity in his career and to essentially keep the spot that he seemingly had for life in Sydney FC's starting 11. You know what I mean? So that honestly is one thing that comes to mind around that discussion. But I also lost my train of thought on the point you'd made after on Max Burgess. Max Burgess, when he was at Western United as part of the inaugural Western United squad, that situation ended in very, very similar fashion.
Yes.
I can't think
yes.
of this. I can't think of anyone that's almost like caused beef where they've basically taken their career away for the better part of 4, 5, 6 months and not played, and then made a hissy fit about what club they're going to be going to next as well. Because do you remember he found his way to Sydney off the back of essentially giving Western United the cold shoulder and the Phoenix as well, because he was under Rudan at the Phoenix. Very, very bizarre situation that he's had going on.
Very bizarre, yeah. Like
I don't know if it's down to the individual at that point as well, because Rudan and Talay personally are two very different people as well.
Yeah, it's you're right. I remember Western United where he was kind of frozen out, and I think that was with Rudan. Yeah, so it's an interesting one. I think, you know, I always say this with these situations. I think a lot of fans are quick to kind of be like, hey, why isn't Talay starting Burgess? Why isn't he playing Burgess? This, that, and the other. It's like, well, you know, there's always the possibility that, you know, he's being, you know, difficult behind the scenes. So, yeah, let's move on because who knows, maybe one of these teams that we've already discussed will come up in this conversation. But transfer window's open. It opened a few days ago on Thursday. And we've already seen a bunch of moves, actually. And I think three clubs have recruited so far. So they're the Wanderers, Perth Glory, and who was the third one? Would have been Auckland. Yeah, Auckland added Marley Francois, who actually made his debut yesterday against Melbourne City. So there's nine teams who haven't actually signed a player yet in January. Maybe they've offloaded a player, but they haven't signed a player yet in January. Victory, I guess, are going to get... Well, they've got Langerak, but we knew that one was coming. So the question here, guys, is... I guess with avoiding obvious ones like, you know, Brisbane, basically, you know, who's kind of most desperate that kind of needs a January signing to maybe save their season or elevate their season to a certain level? So like it might be the Mariners or the Phoenix going and getting someone that could actually push them to be back in that sort of finals mix, or maybe a Western United adding something to actually push them to be even more competitive. Like what's the thoughts here? Because I think, like, I don't think if we ask the question very simply, oh, who's most desperate to add a player? Well, obviously Brisbane would like to add five players, but A, I don't think they're going to do that. And B, you know, I don't think that's really an interesting conversation. So for you guys, Matt, I'll let you start. What are you looking at? Because obviously we're not going to talk about like Perth either, because we know they've already added like four signings, and who knows, they might add another. But
I mean, I'm happy to talk about those signings, Christian. Which obviously, you know, yeah. I mean, obviously I have a lot of thoughts on that, and there's a lot I can extrapolate on. But specifically with the point of the Mariners, it came to my attention that Jason Cummings was playing less for Mohan Bagan, and there's a lot of Australian talent at that particular club where, you know, because of the political situation in Iran, they got taken from continental football as well. So that was kind of deprived from their season, an opportunity to bring someone like Cummins in. And although he's probably getting a far better wage, you just feel like that'd be a really romantic signing to really bring him back into the club and actually just sort out any issues that they're having in terms of having the full product and being able to put goals on the board. Now, I know Alu Quall's actually come off playing.
Hey, Quall and Edmondson both scored against the Wanderers. They are back.
Tell me if there wasn't that opportunity that you know, Mark Jackson wouldn't take it, because it's very clear to me that that's one that just really springs out. But usually there's murmurs and the right people who know this kind of stuff are giving us a sign, and it's actually quite tragic to me that those signs are not there, because I just think it's a very, very important void for the Mariners to fill, and by no means are they out of contention for the Six as well. They're building things, you know, I'd say that they're stable, but, you know, obviously there's room for improvement. So you want to go from that kind of stable edge where they're not becoming, you know, really, really bad in the way that they're playing. I think they're still fixing a lot of the gaps together, mostly through Mark Jackson's great management, but it just seems like such an obvious one to come up on this conversation.
Oh, I mean, they've been desperate for a striker for like a year. So, funnily enough, probably ever since the guy that we were just talking about left in Jason Cummings. And I agree with you. I think that's one we've been discussing off air for quite a while. Just kind of have they inquired about a Jason Cummings return? Because I think that would be perfect for them. I also think they could do with another creative player. Another kind of Docker type player. I mean, honestly, like a Max Burgess. So I don't know if that's a deal which could still happen. And they're trying to work on it, but
so there was a comment that Abdul Faisal was actually approached.
Yes,
which is a very interesting one. Very interesting.
It's very interesting, but I don't know if that's necessarily what they need. I mean, they've got Theo Harris, they've got Brandman. You've seen someone like Sacha Kusevski. Like, I don't know if they need another sort of raw winger who's not really maybe ready, as we've seen at Perth, not really ready to kind of contribute on a week-to-week basis. But any other teams, Matt, that you're looking at and thinking if they could add a player maybe in this position, that's really going to like take them to another level?
I think you were bang on with the shout of kind of obviously with the Phoenix as well. We know that the high intensity that's involved in playing their style of football. They just had Altay left, Van Hatton for a Kiwi to leave the Phoenix is pretty odd, and maybe a bit of a sign of the times with a better New Zealand team. Not saying Phoenix Skate was correct or anything, but it kind of was what I was alluding to. Might be the problem all those years ago. Anyway.
I love how Phoenix Skate is just like a casual like term, which everyone here on this podcast just needs to understand.
I definitely don't think about it every single day. But look, with the Phoenix, there's a high demand in what Chiefy wants, right? So they kind of have to get any and all signings bang on, and that's where you get a bit concerned, because in A-League football, with the way things are restricted in the regulations, it is really, really difficult to just get signings bang on, you know? And I think it's all the more frustrating in that someone like Ufitale with Sydney, it actually seems like the rotation and the youth of the academy players is a bigger problem than the actual foreign influence and the signings that you bring into a club like that. And now I think Chiefy's going to have to give Wolfie a bit of a call and say, can you give me some advice on this? Because he's going to need to get his signings bang on, right, to really get that team cooking again. And Weston's another great shout as well. I mean, if you can just bring the harmony and the aura that John Aloisi brings and really add to that as well, you are going to have a club that's really on song and a club that actually could really establish itself as, you know, a top four presence in the league in its current state. So, to be honest, I don't really have anything else to add. The only thing I would be able to add, and I know how you feel about me going, you know, on or off about this, but I think obviously the signings that the Perth have made and my thoughts on that. But honestly, we can hold off on that.
Yeah. I think with Western, I wouldn't do anything, because I actually think they've got a really harmonious, cohesive unit. And I, to be fair, they might not even actually have the ability to do anything, but I wouldn't, because I think they've actually been able to make some money off Tom Hewitt-Bell, who hasn't even played. So that's great for them. They'd love that. The only thing for them would be if like some European club comes knocking on the door for Dylan Leonard or Abba Wallety, like in this window, and they might have to cash out right now, and maybe they reinvest that money. That could be an option for them. But I think that's probably the only way they would do something. Jack, before I throw to you, I just want to touch on Wellington, because they were my team. We talked about Wellington last week in depth, so I don't want to go into it too far, but like seeing Alte depart this week as well, like I'm incredibly concerned about their squad depth, about where they're going. I think if we had to, because if we're looking at the table right now, I think there's eight teams. That top eight is the pack that's kind of hunting for finals at the moment and the premiership. But then there's those two, Mariners and Phoenix, who are just outside that, trying to find their way in. I think the Mariners are much closer to finding their way in to the Phoenix right now. And Wellington, like Roof is out, and it seems like he's out for a while. They've just lost Alte, who actually hadn't even been playing that bad. And it looks like, if rumors are correct, that he might be joining the Wanderers, so like another team, which is even worse. And like they've already lost Pennington, of course, in the offseason. And Matt, you probably agree, I think Pennington's been pretty good for Perth. Like their midfield depth is getting extremely concerning. I don't really have an issue with them kind of moving off of David Ball. I know a lot of Phoenix fans have kind of been up in arms about that, but I don't think he was good at all last year, and I thought it was kind of time to move on.
That the club treated him like shit. That's why people are upset about it.
That's probably fair enough, and I don't really know the ins and outs, and that's why I'm not going to comment on that side of it. But I understood like tactically and fit and all that sort of stuff why it was kind of time to move on. But anyway, like, they have to do something. If they want to be a finals team, they must do something. And I think they will. I think they will maybe add a kind of Rojas replacement, because he looks like he's going to be out for a while. So that's another concerning thing, because it seems like whatever Chiefy wanted to do this season, it was geared towards Marco Rojas. That's kind of a lot of the rhetoric we got at the start of the season, and him being out, Kolakowski being out, and they've put way too much faith in their young players who don't seem to be ready. So they're a real problem team for me, and they've got to get moving. Jack, what about you?
Funnily enough, I was going to touch on the Wellington Phoenix, but I think you summed it up pretty nicely in that discussion. I think I want to focus in. I know we just talked about them, but Sydney FC have an issue. And that issue is Alexander Popovich's loan ends at the end of the month.
Yes.
January 31. And that means, like, effectively, they have got one out-and-out centre-back who's already in the starting lineup in Hayden Matthews, and that's it. That's all they have in centre defence. And we talked about
Aaron Gerd, but he's more rotation player. Yeah.
Yeah, and also Gerd, you've seen him like deputize in the midfield as well. Like he's got some versatility. Like I wouldn't.
He has.
He's stepped up into the midfield on a few occasions, like tactically.
I think last season. I haven't seen him play midfield this season.
Not this season. No.
Last season.
So like again, like out and out, like dogged, no nonsense centre back. They got like none when Alexander Popovic leaves at the end of his loan. So with, like you said, Thomas Deng and Milos Dejanek being available, Sydney FC really need to put some pedal to the metal and try and get at least one of those guys into the club. I think those are the two people they have to target. They need to throw as much as they can at those guys because they really need someone to partner up with either Matthews or Grant, who's a seasoned centre-back and has played hundreds of games in the centre of the defence and knows how to organise a defensive structure. So I think that Sydney FC have to have a good window with defensive signings. I also wanted to highlight just like a few rumours. Charles Mbonwa was training with the Newcastle Jets. It looks like they're going to sign him for the remainder of the season, if reports are to be believed, along with Mitsunuma from a former Yokohama F Marinos player. Mitsunuma, Kota Mitsunuma. I got the first.
Is he the 34-year-old?
34 winger or wide midfielder who
and what's the update on the termination of Welesol's contract? What's going on there?
I've been trying to get it over the line, mate. No, I'm just kidding. The least said about that, the better. I mean, at least there's a worse signing than Mario Yardell now in the Newcastle Jets. Import department, so we can say that Mario Yardell is not top of the pops when it comes to that. But yeah, I would say Sydney FC need a move, especially considering West Sydney Wanderers have made the signing of Alex Gersbach, who's going to really help their squad, in my opinion, and really going to push them forward. And like really, if you look at the table and look how it's structured, and you look at the games remaining, Sydney FC, Melbourne Victory, and West Sydney Wanderers are fighting for possibly only one spot in the top six, three of those clubs. Because if you look at the likes of MacArthur, like they're really consistent at the moment and consistently getting results, right? Western United seem to have just like found this new win that's going to kick them into a top four, looking like a top four team. Like Auckland to me and Adelaide United look untouchable as top two teams at this point. I don't see that changing anytime soon. I know that the points...
That's a big call.
I know the points look tight. I know it looks tight, but... The quality for me for those two teams and what I've seen from both of them, their ability to win games has been exceptional, and I think that's going to like launch them there. So, Sydney FC really need to get their act together. I think Sydney FC are probably the most susceptible to being in the bottom of those three teams that I just mentioned and potentially missing out in the finals if they don't get a defensive reinforcements in this window. I know it was a big call, but...
Yeah, well... Also, first of all, don't sleep on Western United. That's a fucking good team. Other thing I wanted to mention, though, a team we haven't talked about here. You just mentioned Adelaide United. So Adelaide United, they've got Ryan Tunnicliffe taking up a visa spot who's not going to play. And this is the second year of his deal. I'm wondering if there's conversations being had about whether they can get out of that right now. They've got, if they were able to free up his wage, they have two visa spots available. I think if they can, look, we all know my opinion on Ryan Kiddo. If they can upgrade that position with a foreign centre back, another Barverines basically, using Ernest Faber's Dutch connections, like that could really elevate them to being a real championship contender, unless they wanted to stay put and wait till the off season. Who knows? Maybe a possible Craig Goodwin return. Wouldn't shock me. And really, wouldn't shock me. That's all I'm going to say. Let's just leave it there. And maybe that could really... And they could just go for it in the offseason and kind of be like, yep, our young players are ready. Let's go and try and win the championship. But here's another one for you guys. Last team. MacArthur? What if MacArthur had money available in some capacity? Could they look at adding someone in some way? I'm actually looking. Do they have? Yeah, they've actually got two visa spots.
Yeah, two available visas at the moment. I would if I'm MacArthur, I'm targeting some defensive reinforcements and
midfielder.
Those would be the two crucial positions. I think that defensively, if like someone like Uzcock goes down with an injury, they're pretty light on reinforcements in that position. And then they've also been like rotating in like Walter Scott a lot. And I don't think Walter Scott is quite at the A-League level yet. I think that he still has a while to go. So a midfielder, potentially a centre-back, would be a good target for them if they have the funds available. But that also, we can't forget that he hasn't really made a lot of appearances at all. But they've still got Chris Economides sitting around there, who's not even featured. So whether there's something to do with getting Chris Economides at the book, because it looks like he's just not fitting.
Well, he's injured. So I think
that long-term injury, like, you know, you might want to try and move him potentially through some sort of mutual termination. It is mutual termination season in the A-League when it comes to the year,
Actually, we say he's injured. Well, he has been injured, but he hasn't. He's actually not listed in the squad here this week for the Wellington game, which is obviously tomorrow at the time that we record this. So who knows, Jack? Maybe he's come back and they're like, you know, or maybe they've worked out he's not going to be good long term for them.
And he's an odd one. And I don't know if Matt might have something to say about this, but in terms of bolstering the midfield, I would say that a good target, someone who's currently a free agent who you could get on a relatively cheap contract for the last 6 months of the season, just to have him there as a squad player, so you're not exposing the youngsters in the squad too much, that really crucial part of the field. Why not Mustafa Amini? Like, I know he's come off contract, but and he hasn't played a lot at all, really, for the last 6 to 8 months. But really, he can add just a little bit of depth. He doesn't have to start.
Because of the legal situation, I don't mean to interrupt, because he's actually in court with Glory at the moment, they still have to legally pay his wage. So as long as they are still paying his wage, he won't be allowed to be transferred.
And I'm not sure if MacArthur need to get involved in another sort of situation. Like, and enter themselves into some other legal situation they really don't need to be in.
It's actually a good shout, though, because I think the natural destination for Musty is New South Wales. It's just that legally he's not actually allowed to play. So
I think if, like, again, once this legal situation plays out, like, MacArthur's one of them, but I would say the Newcastle Jets would do with Mustafa Amini to guide their young midfielders in there. If that's an off-season signing, and that's probably a talk for you know, 3 or 4 months down the track.
And I also think that if you have a good target player like a German as well, because German, much like Taggart, just having someone with that experience that can actually put the ball through to him and just play with that confidence on the ball, it's what Musty can kind of thrive under. And I think when he was fit, and the games he did play under Stajic in particular, he, unlike anyone else in that midfield, found target with aplomb, you know. So, but I just, to go back to MacArthur in particular, or MacArthur, as Christian put it with his voice crack there, I think that...
Thanks, man. Thanks.
The back line is probably the biggest thing, because I just think that while we're looking at this team unable to kick on, you know, inconsistent results, Millay's proven as a coach, which is a fantastic thing to say, because when he came into the team, I don't think anyone thought that of MacArthur to be able to stay as stable as they are. But as they've gone on with these dependable signings over time, like German, who's been excellent, you know, Yakalis has found a good environment for him to thrive. You know, Economides, if he was fit, you know, that could have been something. I think they've always been able to have good attacking players. It just is someone that is solid and dependable in the back line that stops them from having a full team that can kick on and actually become a threat at the top of the table. So I just think that's a very, very obvious shout as well.
Yeah, and last thing, know that dependable presence is not Tommy Uzcock, so sorry. Tommy Uzcock has been frozen out in recent weeks. It might be get ready to learn NPL, buddy, for Tommy Uzcock soon.
True.
I don't know.
It was probably a really poor example to use, considering he hasn't been in the squad, but, you know, the likes of someone, a senior centre-back, that's the only one I could think of
off the top of
my head real quick there.
No, for sure. I mean, last thing, on Musty you mentioned, I mean, hopefully everything kind of gets sorted out there, because he could definitely slot into a few teams at the moment and help a couple of teams in the A-League for sure. So I'd be interested to see if that's resolved by the off-season, what we see with him. Okay, other shout-outs. We're making some good time here, boys. Good stuff. Other shout-outs on the pod. Your boys, Matt. I wanted to give him a shout-out here. Perth, definitely showing, we've been talking about this, me and you, off air. I think Perth are showing some good signs in the last couple of games. I think they're going to have a much better, it might not be results-wise, but I think performance-wise, they're going to be much better second half of the season, getting some business done. We've already mentioned too. I mentioned Western United just before. I think they're an awesome team. Jack, I think they totally obliterated your team on Friday for much of the game. Definitely
I believe the correct term is they gave us a bath.
They absolutely gave you a bath.
Scientific term for that display.
They gave you a bath, but you know what they were doing? Like, you know, in those violent like scenes in movies where they get like the guy and they put his like, either put his head down the toilet or they put his head like on the side of like a, of like something and they smash his teeth.
It was like an interrogation scene from The Sopranos. Like,
yes. Like basically John Aloisi went full Tony Soprano and Rob Stanton on Friday. That's kind of what happened in that first half.
Say hello to my little friend, Noah Bodich.
Well, we were just saying Tony Soprano and then you just used a Scarface reference. I'm so confused.
I'm just like, miss, I don't know, maybe.
Of course Marchetti knows his mafia films, bloody hell.
Come on, mate, it's not just the Italian stuff, but these are actually, come on, these are classics. Come on,
they're all-time greats, yeah.
They're all-time greats. The mafia space is very fruitful for movies. They're rolling, they're on fire at the moment. I'm not too sure what their ceiling is, but I'm very excited to see where they go. Mariners, big win. Very big win. You could see it by kind of the celebration of Mark Jackson when Docker scored the third goal. Good stuff for them. I think they're definitely showing some grit through some adversity, which is good to see. Auckland, great response to the glory loss. Kind of a really bizarre game against City where I don't think they were necessarily dominant, but they just kind of went bang, bang, bang in 15 minutes. And then that was the game. That was it. So good win. Corrigan kind of changed the team up a little bit, which you got to give him credit for. I thought he kind of swung the axe on a few guys. Liam Gillian, looking at you. We mentioned Brisbane already, but you know, ending their winless run, good for them. Just quickly, Matt. Ruben Zakovic still found a way to blame external factors after the game, even though they won. So it's actually almost hard. It was harder to do that. So anyway, and last thing, I just want to shout it again. Original rivalry. We had, I think, what was reported 14,000 at Cooper's last night. I think I'm getting some word today that there was probably more than that. It was probably 15 and there were some issues with the way they counted the tickets or something. So awesome. Ethan Aligic getting his moment that he probably dreamed of since he was like 6 years old was fucking awesome to see. And the way he celebrated that, like, just sick. Panikikianis, fantastic performance. Adelaide, trending right. And they've got Auckland on Wednesday, which is just going to be like, mwah, like just a perfect Wednesday night football game.
Box
which
office
I can't wait.
Football.
Box office. Absolute box office. So can't wait for that. Matt, you seem keen to address something here. What kind of stands out to you out of that? Please pick one or two things. Don't address every single thing. Cheers.
I was actually just going to give a shout out to the re-arrival of Henry Hoare. That's literally all I was going to say was
fair play.
His role within the Brisbane team is obviously very crucial. And I don't think many people know this about Henry Hoare because obviously he did have that existing relationship with Roar as the club. But while he was at Perth Glory in the Youth Academy at Glory, who was his manager? Ruben Zadkovic. So that re-establishment of that relationship has clearly gone absolute gangbusters. Exactly what that club needed. Just some parity and some of Ruben just being in an environment that he knows and loves with the players is very important. Due respect to, you know, Keegan Jelicic, who's not kicked on in the way that many of us had hoped after his move to Belgium, I think that Henry Hoare is a player that is a Ruben product that is actually, you know, pretty good. Am I allowed to say that?
The biggest compliment to Henry Hoare. Henry Hoare has an opportunity to put himself like he has an opportunity to basically double his transfer value if he is able to like single handedly take Brisbane to like finishing, I don't know, like ninth. Like if he does that, then fuck me. So I don't know. Like is. And we could have a discussion in like 4 weeks about, hey, the Zakovic era was just ruined by the fact he didn't have Henry Hoare for the first 12 games.
Well, we know Perth are on the rise. We know Henry Hoare's now arrived at Brisbane. Where does this leave Robbie Stanton's Newcastle Jets would be my question.
I predicted them finishing bottom. So either way, I win. Yeah.
Jack's win. Like, hey, it's my club. I predict them to be shit. Great. Yeah.
If I could pick one thing out of the round.
Yes.
Just Fucking hell, Noah Bodic, you're good. You're good at footy, bro. He's just
2019 under 17s World Cup. Thank you.
Yeah. I know. We know all that, but he sort of went to Hoffenheim, and since he's come back to Australia, like he's sort of been purple patch, then a bit of a, you know, like down in form, and then back up again. It's been a little topsy turvy. Now he's got consistent form, and he's playing really good click. He's got a great partnership with Ibasuki, and like they were asking him about it on the telecast. I'm just gonna say, like, 2026, when Australia rock up to the World Cup, given our aging strikers, it's highly likely that Noah Bodic is going to be in there, in that squad and probably starting. So I'm going to say that now, in 18 months, like, Noah Bodic, like, he's that dude.
Jesus, know? Christ. Okay.
Yeah.
That
if
is
we get,
fucking...
If we get Teague and Bodic in the Socceroos team, throwback to the best Joey's team of the past.
It's over for these pitches, man. It's over.
Matt's like, I just want Tony Popovich's selections. All I want him to think about is creating arcs from like youth teams from like years gone by. Who cares about who's in form? Just if we can bring back guys from like the Joey's team in 2019 and put them in the Socceroos, that'd just be a great narrative. So let's just do that. That's basically what Matt's thought process is with national team selection.
Analysis.
Vibes-based selections. Thanks, Tony. But no, I mean, Bottish, that second goal was unbelievable. And actually, even the header last week against Victory, and even that header against Newcastle, the first goal, like, that wasn't an easy sort of... Garuccio's actually kind of hit that cross pretty hard, and he's just been able to direct it.
Well, he's always been an aerial threat, and like Matt, I'll say it again. You know, at that World Cup, like his aerial ability and his also ability to be technical and hold up play and all that sort of stuff is why he got his move to Hoffenheim in the first place. But just to see those aspects of his game, and then to add in, you know, a long range threat with that, like where Australia's been lacking a complete forward for the best, you know, like 5 to 10 years could kick on in the Socceroos team, right? Since like Tim Cahill, basically a complete forward, he could basically do it all, score goals, you know, when he wants. And Noah Bodic now, I think, has developed all those tools. It's just about being consistent. It's just about staying consistent. And the World Cup, it's coming up soon. Like, it's only 18 months away, people. It's coming up quick. And like Popovic, if he doesn't have a Socceroos cap and he keeps playing the way he is by the end of this year, I'm asking questions. I'm asking questions.
You haven't qualified yet?
Yeah, I was about to say that. Yeah, I think the more pressing issue is, let's just make sure we get there. But no, just put a bow on
there, yeah.
Yeah, look, I think they'll get there too. But put a bow on this. Also, I think, unlike Thomas Waddingham, who I think has gone way too early to Europe, I think Bottic might be one. I think Aloisi seems to think he needs another season. But I think he's kind of gone through his growing pains a little bit, and now we're seeing the best of him. And I think he's got the physique too that I think he might be in the off season one that's kind of ready.
If he wants
move.
To target a country, he needs to go to Italy. He's the archetypal striker for a Serie A, Serie B striker. So I'm just going to put that out there. Sorry.
Okay, interesting. That's an interesting one. Keep an eye. Watch that space then. All right, boys. Good stuff. Nice timely podcast for the listeners. Well done, Matt. Good for you. Good stuff. Keeping it succinct tonight. Okay. And we once, like, for history here, the three of us once did a podcast which went for 2.5 hours. So, yeah, we're doing well to keep this around just over an hour.
Want to talk about City versus Country Rugby League before we go, Matt Olsen? No,
thanks, guys.
Obviously,
thanks.
The Footscray Matildas are kicking off in 7 minutes.
Cheers. Yeah, cheers. Thanks. We'll just bring that to a halt. just don't even let the I'm not even going to give the tangent any time to breathe.
Why is the Chinese flag in the background? I wonder why.
This is a podcast, mate. They can't see that. So. just a reminder. Anyway, any Matt, whilst we're on the topic, anything to add? Signing off.
Well, obviously we're going to qualify for China tonight, so that's why the flag is here. So yeah, congratulations to Trudy and Mary and the girls.
Jack,
I just wanted to flag that you'll be hearing Boomer Tui and Boomer Matt Olsen watch their very beloved teams in the A-League this week on FPF TV. So
that's right.
Please.
Newcastle versus Perth. A bit of Tui,
Spoon,
a bit of
bowl,
Matt Olsen.
It's big. It's back. It's better than ever. All right. Let's get it on. It's going to be a whole heap of fun. The last time I watched Newcastle, I basically crashed out whilst they were playing against Auckland. Christian really, really enjoyed that. So I think, Christian, you said you wanted to maybe be involved in that, maybe. A little bit of the tech.
I don't think it's a question of you asking me. I think it's just me telling you, yeah, I'll be on. So, yeah.
Sweet. Yeah. There you go. That's your trio. All right.
So we'll be back, FPF TV then, us three, this week. No problem. And I'm a de facto Glory fan at the moment because I'm back on those Rilish train. So, yeah, me and Matt are going to be going for Glory in that game. So, yeah, awesome, awesome. This Rilish is hopefully going to pull Stanton's pants down, with all due respect, Jack. So, yeah. Anyway.
Don't disrespect him. He built Australia.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Sorry, I forgot. I'd imagine the Jets have got some boxing gloves at training this week after that horrendous loss to Western. So let's see if they get a reaction with that. All right. Well done, boys. Good stuff. Good analysis as always. And yeah, let's see what happens with Victory in Sydney. They are playing each other next Friday. Massive game. And let's see what happens in January transfer window. Maybe some of those teams we mentioned are going to get busy. But that's been another episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. Go check out frontpagefootball.net. All the articles that's happening, not many of late, but there's some odd stuff here and there that you can go read, social media, follow us, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that good shit. And until next Sunday, it's bye for now.